Ketchikan. My name's Layla Carey, and for the next hour, we'll be talking with this year's Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly candidates. Joining me in the studio are Rodney Dial, Keith Smith, Susan Pickerel, Judith McQuarrie, and David Timmerman. Welcome to you all. And if you have a question for our candidates, please call 225-9655. But first, let's have each of them introduce themselves and say why they're running for local office. We'll start with Rodney Dial.
Hello, and thank you for this opportunity. My name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I served my country as an airborne ranger, 2nd 75th Ranger Battalion. And then I served my state for the last 25 years as an Alaska State Trooper, rising to the rank of commander in charge of state law enforcement services for all of Southeast Alaska. I managed multiple buildings, budgets, and employees. I was also a state legislative expert responsible for reviewing legislation, primarily fiscal review and research to determine the unintended consequences of specific proposed legislation. I'm basically running because, having been in a management role for government, I can see where we're going as a community, and not everything is good. We've had three tax increases in just the last few years. Utility rates are up over 30% and are rising at four times the rate of inflation, with many more planned increases. PFD reductions in this community have pulled $13 million out of our community, or will soon. We have reduced revenue sharing from the state and our local debt. It's dangerously high. We've spent more today on just debt payments in the borough than the borough collects from all sales tax revenue. It's around $5.1 million a year. Employee costs are increasing faster than inflation. Healthcare costs for borough employees are up by 12% in the last year alone. And businesses are leaving all over this island. Before every tax increase, supporters say just one more, and then after we pass that tax increase, and then soon after, it's just not enough. We need another and another. When we look at all the governmental projects done on this island by both the city and the borough that were done without your support, the reason they were done without your support is, and the reason they didn't ask, is because that they knew you would say no, and so they just did it anyway. So I believe you're not being adequately represented, and I believe that special interests have too much power of our local government. I've spent a considerable amount of time reviewing the borough budgets and the 20-plus funds that the borough has over $50 million in. I've got a plan on ways we can trim spending while still maintaining services and support for education. So if you want a candidate who will represent you and do everything possible to hold the line on taxes, then I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. And Keith Smith?
Yes, my name is Keith Smith. I've lived in Ketchikan for 20 years. I first became really interested in borough and city and local politics actually when I was the morning edition host on this radio station. And I found myself a little bit like that backseat driver, that, you know, the side seat driver who's always kind of putting their foot onto the floor when the driver should be braking, and following that through. I think we're at a very important a juncture here in this community. And just following what Mr. Dial has already said, that there's a real question in this election of how bad are things, how bad is it going to get, and what are we going to do as a community in response to that. I think you'll hear tonight a variety of different opinions on that that make this a kind of defining election for this community. And I am interested in participating in that conversation.
Thank you. And Sue Pickerel.
Thank you, Layla, for hosting us here this evening. I'm running for the Borough Assembly because I think I offer commitment to our community and a commitment to progress. I have lived in Ketchikan all my life. My husband, Randy, and I have raised our three children here, and we have six grandchildren attending Ketchikan schools. I work at Ketchikan Indian Community as the Deputy Social Services Director. I believe I have the experience in public service, serving on three different school boards, serving on the local KIC Tribal Council, and was appointed by the governor to serve on two statewide commissions. I have experience with budgeting and policy-making process, and I have experienced the difficulty of making serious decisions about the budgets that affect people's lives. I know that the big issue for this coming year and for the next 5 years will be the budget. I want to take a multi-tiered approach to solving this crisis. Cutting our budget drastically and laying off staff will not solve this problem. Raising taxes will not solve the problem. We must be able to encourage outside businesses to invest in our community, and we have to be able to encourage our longtime businesses to stay open. Too many seasonal businesses will not help our community to sustain a healthy economy. So I ask for your vote on October 4th. I plan on staying here in Ketchikan, and I want to see a bright future for my children and grandchildren and for your children and grandchildren as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And Judith McQuarrie.
My name is Judith McQuarrie, and I'm running for the Borough Assembly because I decided that it was time to step up instead of complain. My interest here, I've been here 37 years, and I came for my job. I came to work at the Ketchikan Public Library and retired from there in 2011. I intend to remain in Ketchikan. My husband and I are both very committed to Ketchikan. I've been here long enough to see how Ketchikan pulls together in a crisis. When things get tough, Ketchikan gets together and we get solutions. I don't think that the sky is falling. I think we're in for some tough times. I don't think that it's all going to head downhill and will never recover from this. I've seen Ketchikan go through hard times. I was here when the pulp mill closed. People were leaving right and left. Businesses were closing. We came out of it. We're back to where we were. Different businesses, different economy, but we're still here. We're still strong. And I want to keep Ketchikan strong. I want to see Ketchikan a vibrant and happy community where people are going to be attracted to come here. If it's gloom and doom, who's going to want to go there? So that's one of the reasons I'm running. The other reason I'm running is because I think our most important decision coming up is the new borough manager. The budget is the budget is the budget. There's, you know, we're going to have to deal with it. But choosing a new borough manager who sets the tone for the day-to-day operations of the borough, this is something that I think is vitally important. So I also ask for your vote on October 4th.
Thank you. And David Timmerman.
All right, thanks. Lived in Ketchikan for about 25 years now. Grew up in Anchorage, so I had the big city life for a long time. I moved down south with my parents in the late 80s, and Alaska pulled me back in my blood. I had a chance to work fishing boats and did that for quite a long time around here, all the way up to the Bering Sea and all the way down to the border of Canada, just about every fishery. Worked for Walden Books, was a local delivery guy for a flower place, ran a shipping department for one of the local grocery stores. So I've got to work a lot of the cross-sections of jobs within the community. I've also served on school board for the last 7 years. Part of what made me want to do that, I was a high school dropout, succumbed to drugs and peer pressure and all that stuff as a kid, and made my road a lot harder to get to where I am today. Work ethic, huge. I excel in those pressure-type situations that are required in working environments. I currently run the Port of Ketchikan for the city as the Assistant Harbor Master, the Port Operations Coordinator. My interactions on school board with the Assembly, I learned a lot about budgeting. There's been a lot of strife between those two bodies. I've also admitted that I might have been part of that strife in the past, but part of that is my brutal honesty, pounding my hands on the table when I feel like there's an inequity. And I feel like the Borough Assembly has only funded the school district to a certain extent, maybe at the 75% level compared to the rest of the state. I'm not saying they need to increase that budget. That's not what I'm running for. I just want to dig my heels in and look at the budget just like everybody else. I think locally we have a chance to weather the storm a lot better than other communities within the state. Part of that is we're so far away from Anchorage and the big economic hits that are going to go on there. So I would like to be on Borough Assembly, check out the new borough manager. I agree. I think we need to get somebody that's very cooperative with multiple local and state entities. I don't think that's been the case lately. And I just want to sit there and listen to people, read, study, learn, and make good, sound, level-headed decisions with six other people. That's why I want your vote.
Thank you. And this is a call-in show, so if you have a question for our candidates, please call now at 225-9655. The show is just an hour, so if you want to get your question in, call now. And my first question is, the process to create a borough charter was approved by the Assembly at its last meeting. Is this something we need? And if so, why? And we'll start with Keith.
It was my opinion that a borough charter is not, I don't understand why we need it. I'm still waiting to hear a strong argument for it. When I'm around the conversation, when it's happening, the thing that is most often referenced is because the borough does not have social service powers, what are we doing funding social service agencies? And in some ways, the question doesn't really make sense to me. I mean, social service, so many of the social service agencies and what they do in Ketchikan directly relate to education, directly relate to economic development. And certainly, if you just look at the issue that we're thankfully is getting a lot of discussion now, I think it started with people talking about removing the park benches, but homelessness and chronic alcoholism in our streets. Well, that's certainly a social service issue, but it is really an economic development issue. It's an economic development issue when you're talking about taking away benches in order that people in the that getting off the cruise ships, many of who are elderly, might have a place to sit in terms of us being hospitable to people on the outsider and making our home hospitable to us. That's all part of economic development. Having people that may not seem safe congregating in certain areas, well, that certainly affects businesses. It affects attracting businesses, make whether we feel safe or not. All those things really fall directly into economic development, which is a power of the borough. So I think that, and since that's the only reason I've heard for why we might actually want a charter, and maybe we'll hear some more reasons at this table, I don't really feel like it's, I haven't heard a good reason for it yet.
Thank you. And Judith?
I would say that spending $16,000 on another special election for something that, in my opinion, ain't broke. We had an election in August. We took September off. We have an election in October. We have an election in November. And now we're talking about an election in December. I think people are getting a little tired of these elections. And I agree with Keith. I don't think it's broken.
Thank you. And David?
Well, the previous speakers are making it pretty easy because I tend to fall in line with that same line of thinking. You know, I've read what they've said in the paper. I've listened to what's been on KRBD about the charter. And I haven't seen a good enough reason to go down the economic route of having to spend more money to get there. On the flip side of that, you know, there's a couple people that are kind of spearheading that. And it doesn't hurt to see what they have in words and then make some decisions. And until that happens, until I see the actual layout of the charter, I really don't have an opinion until then.
Thank you. Susan?
Well, from what I've read about it, the two proponents of this measure have said that it would give the borough residents, I think, greater autonomy, more say-so in what happens. Those measures that include larger, you know, fiscal questions would be put before the voters. And so, you know, for that reason, I'm very interested in. You know, any time that you give the residents of this community the opportunity to make decisions for themselves, I think is a good thing. I will confess I don't know enough about it at this point to say yes or no, but I am very interested, and I want to see more about this. And honestly, if it comes to spending, my understanding was $16,000 was for a mail-in vote, $10,000 was for an in-person vote. And I don't think that's an awful lot to be able to ask the community members, you know, whether this is something that they want, rather than just having two or three people on the borough assembly making that decision. I think that should be made by the community.
Thank you. And Rodney.
I've been in communications with the assembly members that have been proposing this. And my understanding is that it's that the reason behind this, it's done to clearly identify what services the citizens want their government to do. And from that standpoint, I agree with that. I do believe there are ways we can do this with very minimal expense, you know, if we really get into that. But I want to make it very clear. I will not support this if it in any way diminishes the rights of our citizens. And what we have is a situation in which both governments, and I've said this many times on my SIT newsletters and in my speaking engagements, where the government has a pretty good idea of the will of the public. And if they get it in their mind that they want to do a project that they feel the public will not support, they're going to do it anyway. And if this charter were to clearly identify, for example, that the public should have a say in these projects, then I would support that. Because that's what we need to get back to in this community, is a community that is run by the people and for the people.
Thank you. And my next question is related to marijuana, an issue that just keeps on going. The Ketchikan City Council recently voted to limit retail marijuana to 2 stores within city limits. What are your thoughts on limiting retail pot elsewhere in the borough? And this time we'll start with Judith.
I do not think that it's reasonable to override the will of the people in the vote to legalize marijuana by basically saying, oh, no, 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 we know better than you did when you voted for it, and say we don't want to have any marijuana outlets in our community. I think people have said this is something we want to legalize. We want to regulate it. We don't want it to just be a free-for-all, but it's something that people want to bring out from the shadows and have above board and get some tax money for it and have it be like any other regulated drug.
Thank you. And Rodney Dial.
Current zoning requirements already naturally limit the places where these facilities can operate, so I would not support anything that would add another layer of bureaucratic oversight to that.
Thank you. And David Timmerman.
I sat on the marijuana ad hoc committee for the borough as the school district representative, and dug into the regulations, read them all at the state level, have watched what has become at the local level. Rodney's right as far as zoning goes. There's only so many places you can put a store. If you were to actually look into the regs and see what it takes to get a license to open a business of that kind, it is so stringent, it's amazing. The security concerns, the record keeping, the store itself. I would say more than any other business in the state, the ability to get that license and go into business has to have a master business plan to succeed. With that being said, I'm a capitalist. I believe in free market enterprise, and let the community decide by their dollars what's going to succeed and not. I don't think they've limited bars, I mean, at least below 50. Jewelry stores, you can have 50 of those. I think that the community should decide with their dollars.
Thank you. And Keith Smith?
Yes. I'm not entirely opposed to planning and zoning as a rule. So if there was a considered discussion about where you might privilege those businesses to be and how that could be an economic engine even for a particular neighborhood, I might support something like that. But just randomly giving a number of 1 or 2 or 3 doesn't really make any sense to me. It seems a little tentative and leery, and I hope that, and maybe the reason for having that is that we're not sure exactly how it's going to affect us, it being legal, and maybe to start out like that makes sense. But still, 1 and 2 really did not make sense. Planning and zoning is always a good thing.
Thank you. And Sue Pickrell.
Well, I, like Mr. Dial, spent many years enforcing laws related to marijuana and people using marijuana in public and several marijuana grows. That being said, and full disclosure, I don't think marijuana is a good thing. From what I've seen, it has harmed many people's lives, and I would not like to see it in our community being sold. However, the state of Alaska held an election, and the people spoke and said they were in favor of having marijuana be available for sale, and there are regulations in place. I've reviewed some of those regulations, and I, too, agree that in order to have a marijuana business, it is you do have to be really committed to what you're doing, and you do have to be a business person. It's my understanding. It's not just people that want to grow weed and sell it. You really have to have a great business plan in place for it to be accepted to even become a business. And if there are regulations already in place to address where those businesses will be placed, I don't think we should, as Mr. Dial said, I don't think we should impose more restrictions on business people.
Thank you. And this is a call-in show, so if you have a question for our Borough Assembly candidates, we have about 40 minutes left. Call now at 225-9655. It seems as though every year there's an argument on the Assembly about funding for the Ketchikan Public Library. What are your thoughts on continued borough contributions to the city-owned library? And this time we'll start with David Timmerman.
When the library talk started years ago, I've paid close attention to it because I was one of those people that thought maybe libraries were past their time. And part of that was because of the advent of technology, the ability to get books in technological format. Since then, since I hate Kindles and Nooks and things like that, and realized that I still do love the paper in the book, I've changed my mind in that regard. Also, going to our new library, it's fantastic. My son plays up there, my youngest. There's so many different things that go on up there. I've talked about KI as being kind of the central point of the community for so many different events. Well, there's quite a few events that go on at the library as well. And it's a wonderful place to gather. I don't mind the effort that's being made to help fund that right now. I think it's a good model. I think that it requires more communication between the city and the borough on the Cooperative Relations Committee. And I think it's going to take the Assembly to really look at this thoughtfully and economically. But right now, the only thing I don't like about the library is where it is. And part of that is I sit on those cruise ship docks all the time, and people get off those ships wondering where the library is. And I shrug my shoulders, or I slouch my shoulders, and I think of Schombar Hill. And I think of the walk that it takes to get there. So with the exception of the location, I'm pro-library, and I'm pro still funding it at the level that we do.
Thank you. And Judith?
Oh, I pretty much support the library funding. I've been here long enough to remember when the borough supported the library through the school district budget. And when that didn't work anymore, then the Friends of the Library formed with the specific intent of passing an advisory vote for the non-area-wide powers so that the borough would assume non-area-wide powers to have, to fund the library. And that has worked, for better or for worse, ever since then. So the borough has non-area-wide powers. It would absolutely be not cost-effective for the borough to start up its own library. That just doesn't make sense in our community. I think that it is a fabulous bang for the buck that the borough participates in funding for the public library, and I would definitely support continuing that.
Thank you. And Keith Smith.
Yes. I understood that 37% of the people in the borough live outside of the city, and they are the ones that are separately taxed, and that's the borough tax that is in question. Of that 30%, they end up, I hear from the interim librarian, check out disproportionately more books than the people in the city. So I'm pretty sure those people, among those that are being taxed, want a good, healthy library. And I support for the borough to continue to support it that way. That said, there is a little niggling issue out there, and that is that these people who are being taxed are not necessarily, or many of them that I've talked to, are not comfortable with the kind of input that they have in the decisions that the library is making. And so there should be some level of representation in that taxation. I know that a body exists that is an advisory board to the library, and people are advised to sit in it. I just think that there's something that could be done there where that committee could be publicized more, the issues that are being made, the decisions that are out there that are being made about the library could be publicized more, so that there was more kind of engagement and input from the group of people that are especially taxed for it to have input into what their money is going toward.
And Sue Pickrell?
Well, this is the great thing about being a candidate for the Borough Assembly, when you have five great minds and people here that come up with great suggestions. Keith, I appreciate that. As you know, being somebody that lives outside the city, I would agree. If we have to pay for it, you know, then the people that live outside the city that are, you know, having to pay that tax should be a part of the advisory board. And maybe Judith could say something about that representation.
Yes, they are. They are on the advisory board and the Friends board.
Hold on. Sorry. We'll come back to you afterwards. Anyway, we'll let you have a rebuttal.
I support the library. I am not, I guess I would like to review, you know, how much it costs. And, you know, and as a borough assembly member, that's one of the things that we're charged with as an assembly member, is to make sure that our monies are spent prudently. I'm not saying running the day to, you know, being involved in the day-to-day decisions of what books are purchased and those kinds of things. I'm just saying that, you know, the amount of money that's put towards the library, just to make sure that that's, you know, that is appropriate.
Thank you. And Rodney Dial?
I think Keith hit the nail on the head here when he said it's essentially taxation without representation. And I think that's the rub that a lot of borough residents have. At least they feel that way, even if it's not completely accurate. It's kind of like earlier this year when the city manager increased hours at the library, and in doing so increased costs. Essentially with the library, I'm fine with funding it with oversight. I think we need to use our money smarter. For example, my understanding is, hopefully this is up-to-date information, but I believe we're looking for a library and a museum director currently. I've submitted a plan to the city government a long time ago saying that we should consider one director for both the museum and the library, and make the museum seasonal. And if we just made that one change, it would affect the services provided to our citizens very, very minutely in this community, but it could save us $500,000 a year. And so that's kind of one of the things I want to bring to the borough is I don't think we have a revenue problem. I think we have a spending problem, and I think we need to look at how we spend our money and be a little bit smarter with it.
Thank you. And Judith had some comments.
Yeah, Judith's been making faces over here. One thing I would like to remind everybody at this table is 60% of the population of the borough are city residents. And why on earth would it be fair to dump the expense wholly for the public library onto part of our constituents without considering what that might mean for them? And everybody else just gets a free ride? That is not responsible government. Okay, and then the other thing, Rodney's idea about having a joint director for the library and the museum, I actually had to do that one time when we were between museum directors. I got to be the library director and the acting museum director. It's not the marriage that you would think it is. They have two very different missions, and it's not a reasonable thing to ask one person to do both. So I'll stop now.
And can I respond to that a little
bit? Yes, you can.
And I don't disagree with you, Judith, at all. But I guess I would say that, you know, the borough folks did not get to vote on this. And so
they did vote, Rodney. They voted a long time ago.
Well, they didn't get to vote on their level of taxation, let me put it that way. And that's kind of if you're saying that the people out in the borough, outside the city limits, are using this at a great level, I think the first thing I'd want to know is the percentage of our citizens who use their library cards in a given month.
That's provided to the borough every single quarter by the library staff.
Well, what I've seen in the past is that they've tried to get information, and the information that the library likes to provide is information concerning circulation. So you could have a couple super users that check out a lot of books, and it actually skews the numbers a little bit. I can tell you that You know, I write a lot of letters to CityNews. I get a lot of people that email me. I've had a lot of people that claim that they have inside information on what's going on in our library. And they say that one of the reasons that the city increased the hours at the library earlier this year is because the usage of the facility is significantly below what was projected back when we started this project several years ago. And that the folks primarily who wanted to build this facility in the city knew that a lot of the statistical data that was collected on usage of the facility was based upon the homeless that used it in the daytime and the cruise ship passengers, primarily the cruise ship workers that used to go into the facility to use the internet, the free internet. And so I don't know if that's the case. I'd like to get in there and I'd like to look at that. But my point is I think we need to better reflect all citizens, not just the citizens that live in the city.
Okay, and moving on, I do want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show, so if you have a question for our Borough Assembly candidates, please call now at 225-9655. We have about half an hour left in this forum. The Assembly and the School Board often seem to have a somewhat dysfunctional relationship. What solution do you propose to fix or at least improve that relationship? And this time we'll start with Sue Pickerell.
Well, I was able to speak to a couple of school board members since I served on the school board, and just to find out what their opinion was of the relations between the Borough Assembly and the school board and the school district. And it was my understanding that things have improved, that there have been some changes made to the people appointed to serve on that committee, and you know, people, you know, as was said, people have been thinking outside the box, and how do we approach a problem? I think that's the way that we need to move forward. I think that's the way that you bring cooperation and understanding, is by, you know, people speaking their mind, obviously, maybe not pounding on the table, but I think if people can be reasonable and come to some agreement, that's what we're charged with as Borough Assembly members, is to, you know, find solutions and to best represent the people in this community.
Thank you. And Keith Smith.
Yes. I think actually three of us at this table have served on the school board before. And I was on the school board for 1 year. And so I have, in a particularly contentious year between the school board and the Borough Assembly, and I think there's a lot of there's a lack of trust there, oftentimes from the borough, and part of that is not always being able to see clearly into the school board budget process. And I've mentioned it before that there's something that a lot of people don't understand that's called a program-based budget, that the school board presents to the borough, that draws a line so that if they don't fund them for the full amount, it ends up that they end up cutting very popular programs like Kaneyama Exchange is usually at the bottom somewhere. So there's a certain heat that is put on the borough to take responsibility for cutting things that actually some people are very passionate about. At the same time, there'll be big chunks at the top of the budget that is presented for $4 million for elementary education. And there's never any indication from the school board about what in that lump sum is where any kind of innovation has taken place in order to be more efficient or save money. And so there's a kind of process that happens year in, year out that kind of erodes the trust between those. And so I think that collectively we should work at the school board for finding a different way to communicate what's happening in the budget process, and that we can think of some new funding mechanisms that would actually encourage and create incentives for innovation on the school board, level, to be able to save money. And that hasn't happened for years.
Thank you. And David Timmerman.
I know a little bit about this. In 2012, or prior to 2012, we didn't have in-kind services done the way that they were supposed to be. Manager Bockhurst and the Assembly followed him in putting in-kind services into the budget, Part of those were $750,000 in operations for the pool and field use and other things that are not usually used as in-kind services. A letter from Deed followed and said, sorry, you can't do that. The borough manager and assembly brought forth something called contracted services. From that time on, the school board, almost unanimously per person over all those years, struggled with contractual services, paying for how much of the pool they were supposed to pay for, and basically subsidizing recreation for the borough. It was a way of fluffing up the budget for the school district and saying, look at how big their budget is, while not increasing the budget for the borough. The borough should be paying for the pool. The borough should be paying for field use. There's not a school district in the state, much less very many in the country, where the school has to pay to use the football field. It's usually something that is provided by the public entity. Over the course of many years, I did pound the table. So did other school board members. At least one of those is on the assembly now. I think that's part of why he got elected to that position, is because he did pound the table. There's a lot of very non-cooperative atmosphere between the borough manager and the superintendent, and that's a one-sided game there. The superintendent wants to cooperate. When the borough manager hasn't got his way, he has taken his toys and gone to the sandbox, his own sandbox. I'm not trying to raise any heat here or talk bad about anybody. I'm talking about the facts as I see them. Finally, after years of talking to the borough, Glenn Thompson came up with a different funding mechanism, which basically put everything in front of the school board and said, here's what we're going to do. This makes better sense. Is it an easier pill to swallow? The school board looked at that and said, yes, it was. And we happily worked with them this year. But it took somebody to stand up and buck the system that was being put out in reams of paperwork to follow. This time they got rid of the pool money, which was good. And they turned some other things into in-kind services. The school district told the borough, this isn't going to pass in-kind services, but we're going to agree with your budget because it's better than what you've done to us in the past. Sure enough, Deed denied the school district budget based on in-kind services and the things on that list. Well, the immediate thing the borough manager wanted to do was sue. And I think that we're sue happy. We've already gone against the state. If you knew how much damage the borough assembly, or at least the borough manager, has done to our relationships around the state, you'd be amazed, and you would be pleasantly surprised that we have a great superintendent that has had to go behind him and clean up that mess as he's gone along. And he has. He's a very well-respected person in the state, especially from a budgetary stance. I agree the program-based budget is hard to look at sometimes, and it just looks like 20 lines on a page, and it's hard to differentiate. But one thing the assembly is given is the Red Book. And the Red Book is the master plan, the several hundred pages that break down the programs within the budget, where you can glean that information of where things are being saved and where things are being moved around. Whether they read that, I don't know. It's a lot of stuff to read. I think the relationships are getting better. I think you've got some assembly members that have been put in line with what they've said as far as negative things towards the school district, saying we wouldn't uphold our oath and that we were doing things illegally, when actually the borough is submitting things against the chart of accounts, which is the way the state wants to rectify all accounting measures within the district and within the budgets. And when you throw stuff on there that shouldn't be there, sure enough, you're going to get your budget denied. I think there's been inroads made to all that. I think there's a chance to have a new assembly with some people on there that are going to remain on there that have had some vision to change things, to cooperate. The liaison committee has done better lately. That's something that we as school board members really listen to, because that's the main body that can share that information back and forth. And as long as you have the right four people on there, two from the school district, two from the assembly, you can get a lot done in there and get rid of a lot of the angst at the table. Yeah, that's kind of where I sit with that.
Thank you. And Rodney Dial?
Yes, so all of us have been at a few of these speaking engagements, and I keep hearing people kind of take shots at the borough manager. And, you know, I was never really a big fan of his because of the consolidation thing. But I got to tell you, going through the documents that I have since I've applied for this position, the borough manager's done a pretty good job. He's trying to balance the needs of all citizens, and that includes the people that pay the taxes. So I think for the most part, the people that are not completely happy with them are not so because they want them to spend more money. Regarding education, like I've said many times in the past, education is the primary responsibility of the borough. It's the one thing that we must do. And one of the reasons I'm so passionate about efficient government is because we need to support education. And we especially need to be prudent because if you go through the borough documents right now, we have identified $12.5 million in anticipated school capital costs currently forecast in the next 5 years. And so I don't think we should influence the school board. I think that's their thing to control. I think they do a great job. And I think that the borough, I think a little bit of friction between the borough and the school board, it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. I mean, one is not there to rubber stamp the other. So can we get better? Sure. And if I'm elected, I'm going to try to do that.
Thank you. And Judith?
I feel a lot of compassion for the school board. It's kind of like I explained middle management, all of the responsibility and none of the actual authority. They can do the best job on the planet putting together a good budget, but it's the assembly that gives it the thumbs up or the thumbs down. I have been really encouraged by the Cooperative Relations Committee. I think that that has made all the difference in the world. The acrimony between the school district and the borough assembly doesn't benefit anyone. We have to get along our various parts of government. Governing is it's a cooperative effort. You can be as right as you want to be, and if you're the only one in the room that thinks that, it ain't going to happen. You know, you just have to be able to listen to people, hear their concerns, and sometimes compromise. That is really not a dirty word. Compromise is not a terrible word to use. It needs to be done. We're a small island. There's only 14,000 of us. We have jobs to do, and we must work together to get them done. I have to agree with Mr. Timmerman. I thought it was crazy for the borough to sue the state over the education. It was kind of like a no-win situation. I mean, and they won on the one hand, but then they lost on the other hand. We spent an incredible amount of money, and we didn't have anything to show for that. This is not a wise way to govern. Cooperation is a much, much better plan.
Thank you. And we have about 15 minutes left in this call-in forum, time for maybe two more questions. So any of you who have been holding off on calling, do it now, 225-9655. And my next question is, what do you believe is the biggest mistake the borough assembly made over the last year, and what would you have done instead? And this time we'll start with Rodney Dial.
Okay, last year. I think last year they've actually done many things right. And for one example, currently the borough budget's about $750,000 in deficit spending mode. The borough assembly considered a tax increase. They decided to defer for this year, which means that the new assembly will have that decision put before them. I really don't have any criticisms with the last year. Most of my criticisms are things that have taken place over the years in both governments. I believe we've had some pretty dedicated people up there, and they've really tried hard to meet the needs of all citizens. So my big thing is I want to get in there and start working on some efficiency measures like I used to do with the troopers as a commander for the troopers, and kind of go from there. I want to restore accountability, and I want to put the decisions back in the hands of the people.
Thank you. And Keith Smith?
Yes. Well, the one that's on my mind right now is that in January, Governor Walker came to Ketchikan and said, we have $96 million left from the bridge project. And we're going to give it to the borough to do whatever they want to with it. Of course, he didn't really mean that. We have to whatever we wanted to do with it through DOT. But for this entire year, there was one project that they thought that that money would go toward, and then they just put out random bids without criteria to the other governor bodies of saying, well, what else do you want to spend this money on? So we have proposed money that's high on the priority list to go to the shipyard. We have different street paved. There's things on it for paving a road down in Mud Bite. But none of it has anything to do with Gravina access. And Gravina development. If Gravina development was ever a good idea, it's still a good idea. So the idea that we put all this energy towards a bridge, which we didn't get, and what we're going to end up with is either random projects here or the G4V alternative, which is a new terminal on one side, a new ramp, another terminal on the other side. We're going to end up with something very much like what we have already, and it's just going to be kind of big and bigger and shinier. And one important thing is that we will have duplication, redundancy within our system, which I think is very important, so that if something breaks, you'll still be able to get someone over for a medevac. It's important that we do have redundancy so that we can be absolutely secure that people can get over to the airport, and our city depends on that. But now the rest of that money, that it doesn't seem like there's any pushback at all on the borough assembly of saying, hey, wait a minute, we're going to spend the last remaining money that was put in towards Gravina development on this. Let's back it up and figure out something that really makes sense and is in tune with the goals and the plans, the Gravina development plan that has existed for years, so that some of those objectives can still take place.
Thank you. Sue Pickrell?
Actually, Keith, I think there was some question as to whether we were going to get the money at all. That was my understanding of the last discussion that they had.
I'm sorry.
I guess one of the mistakes that I saw the borough assembly made, and I heard from several people about this, was pitting nonprofits against each other and forcing people that are in directorship in nonprofit organizations to stand up and say what their salaries were and basically kind of have to grovel before the borough assembly. I think that's a huge mistake. I think the people that provide those services in our community are a great bang for the buck. I think they provide lots of services that we would not have otherwise, and I think they should be valued. I think anything that's in our budget deserves scrutiny, and certainly, at a time when our budgets are in question and we're talking about raising the mill rate and we're talking about possibility of raising taxes, certainly it deserves scrutiny. But I think there's a way to do it more cooperative fashion and not pit organizations one against the other. Perhaps that can be done in committees and so that there are recommendations brought before the borough assembly so that it's not basically an all-out brawl at a public meeting and people are made to feel that they have to beg for their programs.
Thank you. Judith McQuarrie?
I think that I'm not sure I've got the timing exactly right, but I think the biggest mistake that the Borough Assembly has made recently was the lawsuit against the state of Alaska. And not just because I think that they probably shouldn't have done that. I think that it has damaged the reputation of our entire community across the state. And it was, and it continued, and we kept throwing good money after bad. And I think that was just a big mistake.
Thank you. And David Timmerman.
Well, it's been good answers around the table already. If you were to go back a little bit more than a year, I'd agree with the lawsuit. The Gravina access thing and the money, if that money was available, totally agree with that. That would be a terrible thing if we didn't go down some sort of route there. Within the last year, there's been several assembly members that have been very thoughtful. For instance, and I've been saying Glenn Thompson too many times. I'm giving him too many plugs. It's a good thing he's not running for anything. But coming up with a different kind of funding model with the school district has been a wonderful thing. And whether it be just a repair of relations or anything else. But I think one of the biggest mistakes that the borough's done is submitting the school district budget with all those things on that in-kind services list and getting the school district budget denied. That would be what I think is the biggest mistake so far.
Thank you. And we do have a caller on the line. It is Amy, and Amy has a question. Go ahead, Amy. Go ahead, Amy. Sorry. There we go.
Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. My question is, what do you think should be done about revitalizing downtown and perhaps reclaiming it from the cruise ship?
Okay, revitalizing downtown Ketchikan and reclaiming it from the cruise ships, which might be more of a city issue, but the city is part of the borough, so and borough does have economic development powers, so perhaps this is something that the borough can take care of too. And we'll start with Keith this time.
Okay, I think there's a lot of things that can be done. One thing, of course, don't want to pick on Judith here about the library. You don't move important things that are already part of downtown that are open year-round. You don't move them out. That wasn't a good idea. I don't think it was necessarily a great idea originally to move the borough, although I see why they did it, but they were moving another essential part of our downtown away from it. I don't think that's necessarily good government. I think that there's a way that we have not investigated lots of tools that have happened with urban redevelopment around the country where you can create a special tax district where that you can have special incentives for certain kinds of developments within that space. Even if you were able to give tax incentives by making sure that the second stories of all those buildings downtown were actually spent incentives for them to be turned into apartments, so there's people downtown living, which would be people that would then be able to keep a small store going that would be open and just be able to reclaim it bit by bit. But it takes us getting together and really getting the expertise that has been and tools that have been used around the country successfully over and over again and bring them in, evaluate them, get together, and start piecing together a plan.
Thank you. And Judith?
The borough has economic development powers. It also has planning and zoning powers. And even considering all of that, I have to say property ownership, people that own property, they have a right to do what they want on their property. If it were economically viable to have a grocery store in downtown, I think that there would be one. When I started working at the library downtown, there was lots and lots of housing in downtown. Most all of that is now gone. And I'm sorry, Keith, but you can't turn the clock back just because you want it to. You have to move forward. And so I think you're right that we need to be looking at ways to make downtown more of a year-round place. It hurts. It hurts when I drive through downtown and I see boarded-up stores. That's not the place that we want it to be. And on the other hand, the West End has become the economic center of town. It's not downtown anymore. That's the economic center. So I don't have any easy answers for that, but I think we have to start from where we're at.
Thank you. And David Timmerman.
That's a good question, Amy. You know, I've worked on the port, and I've seen downtown change on a daily, monthly, yearly basis, maybe as much as anybody in town. I've been stationed down there since the day after 9/11 in 2001. When I first moved here, there was, I think, 10 jewelry stores and 50 bars, and that has flip-flopped. I'm not saying it should go back to 50 bars and 10 jewelry stores, but when you have property owners, and this has been touched on already at the table, and you have the ability to rent that space for top dollar And the only people that can afford to do that is a jewelry store, a national or international chain. That's what you're going to get. That is capitalism. That is free market. That's letting things play themselves out economically with the tools that you have. I don't know what you can do to revitalize downtown. CPV funds, the monies that we get as a community, we get $5 per person in this community to do things downtown. That can be anything tourism related, whether it be new benches for people to sleep on.
Sit on.
Or sit on. I don't mind if they sleep there at night. It happens. I might have slept on a bench once or twice, too. You got to revitalize downtown with the money that's available. CPV funds is probably one of those things. And I also, while I said something about CPV funds, this isn't to pick on Rodney, but even if you consolidated, you'd still get the same amount of money for this community per head tax. It's just split between the two entities right now because there are two entities.
That's not true.
You'd still get the same amount of money.
That's not true.
So anyway, that $5 per head that would go to the community of Ketchikan, I think you got to look at using that money to revitalize.
Yeah, can I respond to that real quick?
Your turn is coming up, and okay. Then you can respond then. Thank you. Sue Pickrell?
Well, I think this has to be addressed in planning, and that is what kind of a community do we want. I would agree with Dave that we can't just tell people what kind of a business they can run in the downtown area. However, as a part of the duties for the borough, that is planning. What does our community look like, and how do we, again, provide incentives for long-time permanent businesses to open up businesses? There has to be ways that we can provide those incentives. I am a little bit concerned about what's been done in the past to for economic development. It seems like every harebrained idea, comes before the borough assembly, and before you know it, they're off and running with yet another business that's, wooden bowls that went out of business, faster than they opened, and thousands and thousands of dollars out the door. So I think it has to be long-term planning to address those issues. The other concern that I really have for our community, and that is the unemployment. We've gone from, a fishing town, pulp mill, to really in the wintertime, underemployed people. And they can't buy houses, and they can't make a living full year, for year round. So they're dependent on, financial assistance through much of the year. We will never grow as a community if we can't encourage long-term businesses and support the people that will stay here year round. And that's where I'd like to see our efforts go into planning and then supporting permanent year-round businesses.
Thank you. And those were really nice bowls.
I still have some.
They really were very nice.
I still
bowls.
Have some, yeah.
I'm sorry, Rodney Dial.
Okay, Amy, that was a great question you have. And in fact, that is a primary concern of mine, too, about what can we do to revitalize downtown. If you basically look throughout Southeast, you're going to see a great disparity of communities. If you look over at Sitka, if you go to Sitka, year-round, downtown shops. If you look at Juneau would have seasonal shops a lot like we do, except that they have the government during the off-season. So we're kind of unique. In Southeast, there's essentially three powerhouses, and that's Juneau, Sitka, and Ketchikan. And the communities have been kind of trying to their best to get the tourism dollars. Now, one of the problems that we have is the rent is so high downtown right now that there's very little that our locals can sell at a high enough profit rate where people will come in buy things from them versus going online and buying them. And one of the things that we can do to try to make it easier for businesses to exist in our community is we need to start considering the impact that our high taxes have. We have the highest taxes in Southeast Alaska. If you go to Sitka, they've got a seasonal tax, for example, a seasonal sales tax, where they actually reduce taxes in the off-season so that their citizens have an easier time of affording to live there. We also have the highest utility rates in Southeast Alaska of the major communities. And the thing that I have been saying throughout this campaign is If we don't start focusing on our businesses, we're not going to have very many of them. I mean, we've seen the bowling alley go, the roller rink before that, the Sears, the Burger King. We've seen the mall be half empty. We see the boarded up downtown. None of these businesses now are generating tax revenue for us. And as they go away, the share of taxes that our citizens must pay is increasing. So that's kind of my thought process on that. We need to limit the future increases that our businesses are going to experience or they're going to leave. Now, regarding the CPV fund, that was decided by the Department of Revenue about 2 weeks after the last consolidation attempt. And essentially what they said was that the city of Ketchikan could take a bite of those CPV funds, but the city of Ketchikan already levies a $7 and I think it's 50 cent head tax on each person that comes off the boat. So there's more to this story than you would believe. The fact, the unrefutable fact is that consolidation, because we did not consolidate in 2006, we have received about $2.2 million every year since, and that right now is approaching about $25 million total that has been used for all number of projects throughout this island. So I researched this topic in detail. I still have reams of documents on it. So, I mean, if you want to debate on this, I'll debate you all day on it. But I can tell you it's a little more complicated than that. Yes, the city could get a bite of those funds, in a consolidated scenario, but they would have to pick and choose. And the result would be about $2 million less for our community every year.
Did you want to respond to
you? Just to say that's not true, but that's all.
Okay. and we are over time, so we don't really have time for closing comments. We're going to go ahead and wrap up this evening's candidate call-in forum on KRBD. I've been your host, Layla Carey. Thanks to Amy, who called in with a question, and to our candidates, Rodney Dial, Keith Smith, Susan Pickerel, Judith McQuarrie, and David Timmerman. The local election is 1 week away on October 4th, so please remember to vote. And good night.